All the dandies were staying close to the safe house, so the streets seemed incredibly quiet as Briar made his way down Ashmore. He was glad of the privacy, not wanting to lead any of the butcher's allies straight to the small building where Wentz and his people were holed up. It had once been a used bookstore, but had seemingly been abandoned for years, if the faded brick and boarded-up windows, sprayed with several coats of graffiti, were any indication. Briar wondered if they'd chosen it for that very reason. The last hideout hadn't been much better. The cliché burned. The vampire was about to make his way around back when he heard a muffled curse and the sounds of fists hitting flesh. Curious, he followed the sounds of the scuffle, finding himself turning the corner and heading toward a run-down school playground. From his vantage point, Briar could see several hoods, all standing around a body on the ground. It wasn't until the wind shifted, however, that he caught the body's scent. His reaction was instantaneous. "You're either very brave or very stupid," he called out. The three hoods turned to look at him, momentarily ignoring the boy on the ground. Even the boy looked back at Briar, and the dandy wanted to laugh at the look of mild annoyance in his blue eyes. Then he caught sight of the purpling bruise on his cheek, and all his good humor vanished.
"You're far from home," one of the hoods said.
He was wearing a blue t-shirt and had perfectly spaced cornrows in his hair. One of his friends, wearing a green undershirt, snickered.
"Not really,"
Briar remarked. "Well, this is none of your business," another said. He was a strange one, hardly fitting in with his friends, what with his fair hair and awkward manner.
"It is actually because that human belongs to someone already." "Not you,"
the one in blue said.
"You're not the one who marked him. Joey here's been abandoned, haven't you, Joe?"
He kicked out, catching Joe in the ribs. The human muffled his groan of pain. "That was interesting," Briar mused. He hadn't thought the dandies would let that bit of information get out. How much did the others know of his last visit to the city? Maybe more than they should, if the current troubles were anything to go by.
"You seem to know something about me," Briar said slowly. "But I don't even know your names. How about we fix that?"
He learned that the awkward one was Andrew, the one in blue, Malcolm, and the one in green, the ringleader, was Trevor.
"Well, gentlemen,"
Briar said smoothly, once he'd filed their names away for later.
"There's a difference between abandoning a human and coming back for him later. That boy is as much a dandy as I am."
He looked over at Joe and tried to convey the importance of keeping his mouth shut, of keeping that look of disgust off his face. Eventually, the boy lowered his head to the pavement, turning slightly so that the hoods couldn't see his expression.
"I represent the one who marked him," Briar continued. "And I can assure you that Gerard Way will not be happy to find out about this."
"Gerard Way can suck my dick," Trevor snarled.
"Such language," Briar said, around a sigh. "He'll never get your way like that."
"It doesn't matter," Andrew insisted. "Rules are rules, after all. His keeper is gone. You can't be keeper by proxy."
"Do they give you a rule book in this city? When they turn you, I mean," Briar asked. "Because where I come from, Dandy property is dandy property, regardless of where someone's keeper might be. So, I'm just going to go in that, if it's all right with you. It's not, Malcolm said. I was afraid of that, Briar said, with an affected sigh. Are you sure I can't change your minds? No, Trevor said, throwing the dandy a stupid look. Your funeral, Briar replied. He tilted his head to the side and focused on the ringleader. It was easy to rifle through his head, using his talent to zero in on what he needed, to pull out one thought that was close to the surface, always an issue at the back of the hood's mind. The darkness of the grave, the feel of so much dirt over top of him. Digging, always digging, never finding the surface. Opening his mouth to scream, only to end up with a mouthful of soil and no one to hear him. It was a common fear among young vampires, and Briar smiled. It was hardly interesting, but he could work with it. It was easy to turn the thought against all the hoods, not just the one whose mind Briar had ripped it from. Using his skills was second nature by now, and he had no trouble spinning a simple illusion in their heads, chasing everything away except for the feel of cheap satin lining and the smell of moist earth. He even threw in a few worms for good measure, sliding along clawed hands as they dug, across open mouths, screaming silently. He was very good at it, Briar knew. What he wasn't so good at, it turned out, was shielding humans from it. Joe screamed louder than any of the others. Briar felt the illusion flicker at that, but he forced himself to keep it up as he moved closer. It was easy to kill the hoods when they were writhing on the ground, clawing at invisible dirt and scraping their skin against the pavement. Briar hesitated at the awkward one, and finally settled on kicking him hard in the side, sending him rolling across the basketball court. He released the vampire from the illusion and leaned over him. Make sure you tell the others what happened here tonight, Briar said. The hood nodded and staggered to his feet, lurching toward the sidewalk on unsteady legs. Joe still hadn't stopped screaming. Briar knelt next to him, restraining his arms and being careful of the cast on his left wrist. He'd have to discuss that with John at some point, but even he was wary about pushing his luck quite that much. You need to calm down, he said softly. The human continued to thrash without hearing him. Briar tightened his hold and leaned closer, using one hand to steady Joe's face. He locked eyes with the boy and did his best to quickly sift through his thoughts, trying to find one that might calm him. He'd never tried this before, didn't know if it would actually work, but anything had to be worth a shot. He found a likely candidate and pulled it to the front, spinning an illusion to go with it. Home, with his parents, listening to his mother tell ridiculous stories about the patients at the home where she worked, arguing good-naturedly with his father about something in the newspaper, feeling loved and safe. The illusion flickered a few times, the crafting of it strange and unnatural to Briar's mind. But shoddy quality or not, it managed to work. The fight slowly went out of the boy, and his eyes closed gently. He drew deep lungfuls of air, and went pliant against Briar's hands. Can you make it back to your safe house? Briar murmured, not wanting to draw him out of it yet. Yes, Joe said softly. Then go, Briar urged, getting to his feet and helping the boy to stand. He followed close behind, doing his best to maintain the illusion, no matter how faint it must have become with the strain of keeping it up. Briar stayed in the street until Joe disappeared inside. Then he closed the connection between them, leaving the human to his own thoughts. Everywhere Tom turned, there was someone in his way, be they vampire or human with an inflated sense of self-worth. All he wanted was somewhere quiet to think, somewhere that wasn't Mike's suite, but it wasn't looking likely that he was going to find it. There was some bimbo with her giggling friend in the music room, vampires in both parlors, servants in the kitchen, and the attic was quickly being converted into a dorm of sorts. It made sense, Tom supposed. There were a lot of extra people to house, and few dandies were willing to give up their beds to ensure their safety. Frustrated, Tom headed for the corridor near the second-floor suites, hoping to find at least one end of it deserted, so he could curl up in a corner and figure out just what the hell he was going to do. The argument between Mike and John was still ringing in his ears. He didn't think he'd ever be able to let go of those words. "I'm going to turn him," Mike said, matter-of-factly, not even bothering with pleasantries before getting to the heart of the matter. "Has something happened to your short-term memory?" John asked. "Because I know you can't be bringing this up again. You're smarter than that." "Mocking me won't change my mind, Walker," Mike said, not rising to the bait. "I've made the decision." "Have you not heard a word I've said?" John hissed. There was the sound of fine dandy shoes ringing out against polished hardwood, and Tom wished desperately that he could see. From his position around the corner, back pressed tightly against the wall, he couldn't risk it. Either they'd see him and stop talking, or Mike would just act on his decision, and Tom wasn't ready for either possibility. "I'm not letting someone take him from me, not again." If Tom didn't know better, he'd almost think the emotion in the vampire's voice had less to do with possession and more to do with genuine feeling. As he made his way up the stairs, Tom knew that finding privacy was a lost cause. He could hear muted conversations before he could see anyone, and as soon as he got to the top step, he got sight of two vampires standing at one end of the hallway, and two kids sitting at the other. Tom debated what to do for a moment, before Ryan looked away from Spencer and saw him. Not wanting to look like he was being chased away, by them of all people, Tom took a deep breath and slowly made his way down the hallway. It figured that they were sitting near Mike's suite, their backs against the door directly across the hall. Why should things go Tom's way, after all? Not only was he freaking out, but he'd have to do it in the room that doubled as his cell, while two kids he despised sat right outside the door. "I want to go home, Ryan," Spencer was saying as Tom approached. "You heard, John. It's not safe," Ryan exclaimed, with an air of exasperation. Tom guessed he'd said those words more than once already. "You saw what happened to my parents the last time I disappeared," Spencer said. "I can't do that to them again. And I don't want Brendan fucking with their heads, so don't even use that as a way to make me feel better." "It's not like he'll zap away anything important," Ryan insisted, rubbing at his friend's shoulder. "Oh yeah? Let him mind fuck your parents then," Spencer snapped. Ryan drew his hand back quickly, placing his fingers together in his lap. "That was really mean, Spencer," he said softly. "I know," Spencer sighed, putting an arm around Ryan's shoulders. "I'm sorry." "Don't be sorry. You have a point,"
Tom said, as he stopped outside Mike's door.
Shut the fuck up, Ryan snapped. Not about your parents, Tom said. I don't know your backstory, and I don't really care either. But what about his? What do you think is going to happen when John decides to keep you?
He turned away from Ryan and focused his attention on the other boy.
Spencer looked uncomfortable, his eyes sliding away from Tom's, focusing on the wallpaper instead.
He won't, Spencer said softly.
Tom laughed in his face.
Keep telling yourself that, he said.
Spencer?
The boy's name was said simply, in a conversational tone. But Tom didn't doubt that John Walker was angry. He was standing near the stairs, leaning against the banister, watching the three humans at the end of the corridor.
John,
Spencer said, getting to his feet as the vampire held out a hand, beckoning him forward.
You too, Ryan, John said.
Ryan turned his attention briefly to Tom, his sharp eyes looking the other boy over from head to toe, with a quiet, knowing gaze. Tom suddenly felt naked and exposed, as though the kid had managed to see everything.
I'm coming,
Ryan said finally, getting to his feet. He didn't look back as he left. Tom glared at his retreating back, waiting until John and the two boys were gone before he went into the suite and slammed the door hard enough to rattle it in the doorframe. He set to pacing as soon as he was alone, the heavy door and thick walls blocking out the noise of the chaotic house.
Mike was going to turn him. Tom would be a fool if he hadn't figured that out by now, but there'd always been a little part of his mind that wondered if the vampire would just kill him instead. Even if he hadn't planned on that, Tom had thought that maybe Mike would put it off for one reason or another. He hadn't been in much of a hurry to turn him before, although Tom hadn't been in so much trouble back then. He grabbed at his hair, tugging hard, and slumped against the wall. What was he going to do?
Tom's thoughts were interrupted by muffled footsteps in the hall. He froze, his eyes glued to the door, where he could just make out the shadow of a person standing outside. His breath caught in his throat. Was it Mike? Was he going to do it, even though John had said no? Were there consequences to that, or were John's words on the matter more like a suggestion? He didn't know about that. But what he did know was that he wasn't ready. There were still things he wanted to do with his life. He'd only gotten halfway through his education. He'd never been published in any major magazines. He'd never managed to take the perfect photo. He just needed a little time, Tom told himself. Just a few hours, maybe a day. He wasn't ready to give up on everything he'd had, everything he'd run away from. The plan was stupid. Tom knew it. But he still found himself moving toward the balcony and leaning over the side. He was on the second story, but if he held onto the railing and let himself drop, he'd probably make it down all right. Not allowing himself to think about what he was doing, Tom threw his legs over the railing and let himself fall. It was ridiculously easy to run across the grounds, to keep to the shadows as he made his way to the fence that surrounded the property. His ankle throbbed, swelling a little after the way he'd twisted it in the fall. Tom put it out of his head and forced himself to keep moving. There was a car just outside the gates. If he could get to it, he'd be able to put some distance between himself and the dandy house. He knew he couldn't go far. Not when he had someone else's safety to worry about. But maybe everything would be okay if he only went home. There was no way he was hiding if that's where he went. Besides, he hadn't had nearly enough time with his grandmother's things when he first got in. He knew it wasn't much of an excuse, but it was all he had. He thought briefly of Briar, of how his presence had everyone walking on eggshells. Maybe he'd keep Mike in line. No, that was stupid. Briar had made himself very clear on the matter, not to mention the fact that he had his own games to play. Tom wondered how long it would be before the hunters joined the others at the Dandy House. Would they distract Briar completely, to the point where Tom and his soap opera problems were even less of Briar's concern? There was a bitterness in the thought, and the realization left a sinking feeling in Tom's stomach. How fucked up did he have to be to look to Briar for help? Well, Tom had never denied that he'd had problems. It would have been difficult to climb the fence with two good ankles, but with one sprained one, and only a pair of flip-flops, it was nearly impossible. Tom jumped and got a good hold on the decorative ironwork, and was even able to wedge a foot against one of the bars and lift himself up a little. The problem came when it was time to put his weight on his other leg. Pain flared, bright and hot, racing from his ankle to his knee. He cried out and fell back against the lush, well-manicured grass. "Need a hand?" The voice was unfamiliar. Tom froze for a moment before slowly turning to look at the dandy standing behind him. "What?" he asked dumbly. "Christ, but he picks him stupid," the vampire said to himself. "The fence. Do you want help getting over it?" "Why would you help me?" Tom asked warily. "You never got something for nothing." Tom had learned that even before he'd met Mike. "Because they found Celeste in a dumpster," the vampire replied. Tom bit his tongue to keep from asking who that was. "So maybe I'm of the mind that no one should get what they want." Tom just stared at the vampire for a moment, taking in the impatient twist to his mouth, the sadness in his eyes. He was going to turn her, Tom realized. He'd cared for her. "No," Tom told himself. "It's not real." He'd had that once, too. Possession disguised as love. Those kids inside were being conned the same way. But Tom knew the truth. Dressing it up as anything else would only lead to a lot of hurt. He pictured his grandmother's face and got to his feet. "Yes," Tom said. "I would like a hand." The vampire held out his hand, and Tom balanced gingerly on his injured foot, his fingers skimming the cool iron of the fence in an effort to keep upright. "Ready?" the vampire asked. He didn't wait for Tom's reply, just used his strength to propel him over the 12-foot fence. Tom ended up on his hands and knees in the gravel on the other side. His palms were skinned, and his jeans were torn. "Run, little boy. Run," the dandy said, turning away from Tom and making his way back across the lawn. Tom watched him for a moment, dumbfounded, but eventually realized that if he was going, he'd have to leave immediately. He got to his feet and limped toward the car, a small red compact with a long scratch in the rear bumper. There was a key in the ignition, which made Tom happy. He'd worried for a moment that he'd have to hotwire the car. Theoretically, it was like riding a bike. He'd never really forget how to do it. But he was glad not to test the theory. It had been 2 years since he'd last used that skill. As much as he wanted to squeal the tires as he pulled away, Tom managed to find some restraint. Calling attention to himself wasn't a good idea. He drove the speed limit all the way, paid attention to stop signs and other traffic. The last thing he needed was to get pulled over. That would end this before it even started. He parked the car in his grandmother's driveway, not caring that anyone could come by and see it. He wasn't trying to hide, just find some time to clear his head. He'd say come to terms with everything, but that was bullshit. He'd never be completely ready for what was going to happen. But at least he could stop feeling so fucking sad about everything he'd lost. The house still smelled like his grandmother's perfume. It hit him hard, making Tom close his eyes and breathe it in. God, so many memories in that house. 8 years old and sitting on the couch next to his grandmother, a bowl of Cheerios balanced precariously on his lap. He leaned in close, sticking his nose against her neck and taking a deep breath. Thomas, she laughed, pulling away. You smell nice, he said. 10 years old, leaning against the counter in the kitchen, watching as she carefully measured brown sugar and molasses. There was a scowl on his face because the cookies weren't for him. To add insult to injury, he'd have to deliver them to Mrs. Jones across the street. That's not a very welcoming look, his grandmother said pointedly, knowing him well enough that she didn't even have to look up to know he was upset. I'm not in a welcoming mood, he said darkly. That's too bad, she replied smoothly, because only boys on the welcome wagon get cookies. Sourpusses get lemons. 13 years old, and nursing his first broken heart. A girl, the only girl he'd ever crushed on. He'd listened to the Smashing Pumpkins on repeat for 3 days straight, lying diagonally across his bed and refusing to leave his bedroom. His grandmother hadn't laughed at him, hadn't ordered him to come out and do his chores. She'd just left an old, battered tray outside his door, heaped with his favorite foods. 21 years old, and nursing a different kind of broken heart, the kind that came with best friends turning against him, and boyfriends pretending they'd never been anything to one another. She hadn't understood, not really, but she'd pushed his hair back from his face and kissed his forehead. I love you, Tommy, you know that, no matter what. She was gone now, nothing but the memories in his head. Tom fell heavily down on the stairs, pulling his knees to his chest and wrapping his arms around his legs. He tried so hard to put this life away in a little box in his head, to pretend it hadn't mattered, hadn't made him who he was. Things would have been so much easier if he'd been able to believe it, to keep it up, but there was no getting away from it. Even at the Dandy house, there were things that reminded him of it, that brought the memories back so strongly it almost left him breathless. He thought he was strong enough to do this. He hadn't been prepared for how much it hurt to be proven wrong. Tom closed his eyes and leaned his forehead against his knees. He was so tired now that the adrenaline was fading. He wanted to check the clock, see how long he'd been gone, maybe figure out how much time he had left. But it all depended on whether or not that vampire kept quiet, or anyone started looking for him. A knock at the door startled Tom so badly that he nearly fell off the step. He stared at it for a long moment, holding to the irrational hope that he'd imagined the sound. He knew it was stupid, but nothing else made sense. Why would someone who came to get him knock? Whoever was at the door knocked again, and Tom felt his heart start to pound. He sat there for another minute before pulling himself to his feet and shuffling toward the door, the pain in his knees and ankle protesting every movement. His hand shook on the doorknob, but he managed to grip it tightly enough to pull the door open. Nothing could have prepared him for what he found on the doorstep. He could feel the exact moment that his wary expression gave way to one of confusion, and finally, to horror. "Hello, Tom," Alex said, smiling a little sadly at him. "Are you going to invite me in?" "What?" Tom asked, his voice barely above a whisper, as his eyes struggled to focus on any one thing about the man standing across from him. "I know that I don't have to ask. You don't live here, and the property owner is dead, but old habits die hard," he explained. Tom's mouth opened, but no sound would come out. He closed it and tried again, only to have the same thing happen. "Alex!" Tom had been so sad when he'd left. He'd been so worried. He just couldn't process it, couldn't understand. Alex was here, on his grandmother's front step. He was dressed like a dandy. "No," Tom said, voice hoarse. He shook his head and took a step backward, his eyes fixed on Alex's light blue tie. This wasn't right. Alex never dressed up. He hated suits, was more comfortable in faded jeans and a well-worn t-shirt. The closest he ever got to cleaned up was business casual, and that was when he had to meet clients. He was an accountant, for fuck's sake. "This isn't happening," Tom whispered. Alex reached out and grabbed one of Tom's injured hands, holding it palm up between both of his. He bent his head quickly, his tongue darting out, licking lightly at the scrapes, not caring about the dirt mixed in with the blood. Tom jumped backward, cradling his hand against his chest as though he'd been burned. He stared at Alex with wide, wet eyes. "I'm sorry," Alex said, his voice sounding so sincere. "That was cruel." "I'm dreaming or something," Tom stuttered. "This isn't real." "I'm afraid it is," Alex told him, crossing the threshold and stepping into the house. Tom stared at him and found himself noticing stupid things, unimportant things like how his usually shaggy hair was neatly combed back, how he'd shaved, and how his walk was now so much more graceful. Tom shook his head again, more at himself than at Alex. "I'm also sorry that this is so hard on you. I didn't mean for you to find out this way." He shrugged, the motion momentarily pulling the fine suit taut across his shoulders. "Did he break his promise?" Tom demanded, finally pulling himself out of the daze he'd been in. "He said he'd leave you alone if I came with him." But wait, that didn't make any sense. Mike hadn't had enough time to find Alex, and it wasn't like he had allies in Schechter City to help. That was it, then. The truth was staring Tom right in the face. He'd been such an idiot. "How long have you been one of them?" he asked, voice shaking. "Tom," Alex began. "Is your name even Alex?" Tom demanded. Yes, Alex said. "Alexander Greenwald, I didn't lie about that." "Only everything else," Tom spit. He backed up again,
wanting to put as much distance between himself and the vampire as he could. Alex reached out for him, but Tom jumped back, his eyes fixed warily on the dandy's hands. A strong grip, fingers digging into his skin, holding him open, holding him down. Gentle hands sweeping the hair away from his face, tugging on the ends. Fingers laced with his, pressed into the mattress on either side of Tom's head. A lie. All of it. Tom had thought it was real, that he'd finally found someone. He'd been played for a fool. "I did not," Alex said, sounding offended. "You make it sound like you were a game, Tom. That's hardly fair." Tom laughed, the bitter sound nearly sticking in his throat. "Fair?" he asked. "What's fair about what you did? You knew, Alex. You knew who I was and what I left behind." "Yes, I knew," Alex said as he came closer. Tom moved away and quickly ran out of the room when he felt the wall against his back. "We all knew who you were, Tom. How could we not, when you were staying right across the street, in the same building as our servants and our loved ones? And yes, some of us thought you were a fool who should have been sent back home the minute you crossed our border, but some of us admired your bravery." "Bravery?" Tom huffed. "I left an old woman to die." "That was unfortunate," Alex remarked. Tom's hand was moving before he had time to consider the consequences. Alex caught it easily and forced it down at Tom's side. The boy twisted his wrist and drew his hand away, knowing full well that he'd only been able to because Alex had allowed it. Alex moved even closer, reaching up to touch Tom's face. Tom turned away and closed his eyes. "Don't touch me," he said quietly. He blinked furiously, trying to ignore the sting in his eyes, and stared down at his shoes. He'd spent too much time crying already. "All right," Alex said, though he didn't step back. "But we should be getting you back to the safe house. It won't take long for someone to notice you're gone." Tom turned toward the open door and shuffled sideways, the wall rubbing roughly against his back as he tried to avoid touching the vampire. For the second time in as many days, he allowed himself to be led out of his grandmother's house to a waiting car. "How did you do it?" Tom asked, finally, once he'd slumped into the passenger seat. He didn't need to elaborate. He knew Alex would understand. "I'm an illusionist," Alex replied. "Not the strongest of my kind, but I can get the job done." Yeah, Tom really couldn't argue with that. The drive back to the Dandy house was spent in uncomfortable silence. Alex barely paid attention to the road, preferring to stare at the boy beside him. Tom's eyes were closed, and he was hunched in on himself. At one point, he was rocking back and forth, but a hand on his shoulder pulled him out of that. Of course, the touch made him scramble away, pressing himself against the door. But at least the rhythmic back-and-forth motion had stopped. Alex had never left his own city in the 50 years since he'd been turned. He found it interesting to be negotiating strange streets, seeing the differences in boundaries and the similarities as well. He wondered how long it would take before the urge to return home settled in. It was different for everyone, and he was hardly a young fledgling, still a slave to his instincts. But Alex hoped that he'd be long finished with his current business before he felt the first stirrings of restlessness. The Dandy house in the city was lovely,
but Alex much preferred his apartment back home. The manor was nice, a nod back to the first houses after they'd settled. But there was something to be said for the privacy of full apartments. The security code for the gate hadn't been changed since the last time one of Schechter's people had visited. Alex had no trouble making the gate swing open and driving up the laneway, despite the fact that he knew they left the cars outside the property. What kind of entrance would he make if he were to walk? Besides, Tom was hardly in any shape to walk that far. Alex gave him another worried glance, and saw that the boy had pressed his forehead against the window, his gaze focused on the darkness outside. He sat silently, lost in his own thoughts. When he'd asked for permission to travel, Alex hadn't known what he'd find. Briar's report had been detailed when it came to the workings of the house, the crisis they were currently facing, but had been frustratingly vague about Tom himself. He'd never said anything beyond whether or not the boy was still alive, still human. Alex didn't fault him for that. He could hardly ask how Tom was holding up. But the lack of information had left him unsettled and worried. Mike Carden was not his favorite person. They'd met briefly when Alex was newborn, and he'd never forgotten the look of scorn in his face. "Another Alex?" he'd said, as though Alex weren't important in his own way, as though he were worthy of dismissal simply because of his given name and his sire's attraction to it. It hadn't been the only thing that had caught Schechter's eye. Alex had been assured of that over the years. But that first stinging criticism had stayed with him, never truly letting go. The thought of Carden with his hands on Tom, a boy whose strength took Alex's breath away, left him feeling off balance and irritated. Pretending to be human hadn't been the best idea. Alex could acknowledge that. Schechter hadn't offered up an opinion on the matter, but that was hardly unusual. He'd often step back and let his dandies make their own mistakes, so long as they wouldn't harm anyone else or the gang's position in the city. It was almost contradictory to encourage Alex in his obsession. He was breaking an age-old law, even if the boy's keeper lived in a city that was all but dead to them. But maybe he'd figured they couldn't sink any deeper. He had, after all, allowed the boy to stay. Alex put the car in park and cut the engine. He sat there for several moments, looking quietly over at Tom, waiting for him to show any sign of recognition. When he didn't, Alex turned his attention back to the house and saw John Walker standing on the front porch, frowning at him. "John Walker," Alex called, opening the door and sliding out in one graceful motion. He took a few steps forward, drawing John's attention away from Tom, and smiled. "Schechter sends his love." "To tell the truth," John said wryly, "I think we can use a little less love at the moment." Alex laughed. "You don't mean that," he said. "Two envoys in 2 days," John said, changing the subject as he made his way down the stairs. "Why are you here, Greenwald?" "I'm returning a lost soul," Alex said, gesturing toward the car where Tom still sat in the passenger seat. "I found him at his grandmother's house." "And how did you know where that was?" John asked. "MapQuest," Alex replied. He smiled at the flash of annoyance in John's eyes before turning back to the car, moving to open Tom's door and help the boy out. Tom darted away from him, hands fisted at his sides, and Alex's smile faltered. He took a small step backward and allowed Tom to hurry past him, though Alex made a point of following closely behind. Mom used to laugh at him for that, but Alex could never help it. He just smelled so good. Tom wouldn't find it so funny anymore. "We have a full house," John said, as he followed Alex and Tom into the house. Alex realized that before he'd even walked inside. The sound of beating human hearts was far stronger than it should have been. He looked around and counted 5 humans milling about the foyer and the parlors. He could hear at least 4 more on the upper levels. "I heard about your trouble," Alex said in reply. "I can stay with Briar if accommodations are tight."
"Right,"
John said slowly, drawing the word out slightly. Alex realized then that John didn't trust him. Moreover, that he was fully expecting Alex and Briar to conspire against him. The thought annoyed Alex. He'd only been in the house less than 5 minutes. He hadn't even had time to present that kind of first impression.
"Do you know where Briar is?"
Alex asked brusquely.
"Probably in his suite. 3rd floor, 2nd door on the right," John replied.
Alex nodded and turned toward the stairs. He hesitated then, knowing it was not in his best interest, but unable to stop himself.
"Will someone take care of him?"
he asked, inclining his head toward Tom, who was staring at his shoes, not speaking.
"I'll take him upstairs," John offered.
Alex's smile was small but genuine. "Thank you," he said, before hurrying away. Alex knew that Briar was inside the suite before he even opened the door. He didn't bother knocking, which would only irritate the elder vampire. But Alex figured that there were worse things he could have done, given the circumstances. Besides, knocking would have ruined the look of surprise and shock on Briar's face when he caught sight of Alex lounging in the doorway.
"What are you doing here?"
Briar demanded.
"Is that any way to greet me? I know Gabriel taught you better manners than that, because Schechter wouldn't have had it any other way."
Alex was pushing his luck, but he found that he couldn't stop himself. The annoyance coursing through him was too strong to be put off. That didn't mean he wouldn't worry about it later, but for the moment, Alex felt righteous in his anger.
"Hello, Alex," Briar said dryly. "How are you this fine evening? What the hell are you doing here?"
"I asked to come," Alex said honestly. There was no point in lying about it. It was common knowledge, anyway, that Schechter could be almost doting when it came to his favorite children. And Alex was, after all, an Alex.
"I was worried, Briar, and I think I was right to worry."
Briar was insulted, that much was clear. He took a deep breath before asking,
"And the cause of your worry?"
"You've been distracted," Alex said smoothly. "The hunters have taken your attention. Gabriel hinted about it, but he never did come out and tell Schechter who'd managed to enthrall you." Briar snorted at the phrasing, but Alex didn't mind. Briar was Briar, and Alex couldn't hold it against him.
"I am not distracted," Briar insisted.
"Oh?" Alex asked. "Where were you tonight?"
"Since when do I have to account for my whereabouts? I was asked to keep an eye on the house, and I have,"
Briar hissed, leaning close to Alex as he spoke. He was so angry, Alex could feel it, but he held his ground, looking calmly back.
"Watch the house, yes,"
Alex said. "But you've forgotten that Tom is part of the house."
"Tom is a troublemaker," Briar said.
"Maybe so, but he's our troublemaker," Alex replied.
No, Briar said, nearly yelling the word. You've forgotten in the last year, but he is not ours. He belongs to this city and to that mesmerist. He didn't give himself to you, Greenwald. He gave himself to Carden, and Carden is not going to let him undo that, no matter how much you and certain others might want him to.
Briar moved away from him then, heading for the door. He didn't look back as he left the suite, disappearing down the corridor.
Alex followed, unwilling to let things stay as they were. He knew the moment Briar caught sight of Tom. John was leading him up the stairs, one hand hovering over the small of his back, ready to steer him in the right direction should he stop or try to go elsewhere. Alex watched Tom's slow movements, and his breath caught in his throat when Tom looked up and locked eyes with him. His gaze was empty, holding none of the spark that had attracted Alex all those months ago.
You're so self-righteous, Briar said, watching Alex carefully as he continued to track Tom's every movement.
Well, congratulations, Alex. You managed to do what Carden couldn't. You broke him.
No, Alex said softly, turning away from Tom to look at Briar. He won't break. Tom might bend, but even the best of us have to do that now and then.
You have too much hope, Briar said, shaking his head.
Who needs hope when you've got family ties? Alex asked. Briar looked at him sharply, and Alex toyed with the idea of withholding the information as punishment for the poor treatment he'd received from Gabriel's first fledgling. He quickly pushed the thought away. He'd been the one to set the tone, after all.
He had a vision, you know, many years ago.
Not much I gathered, Briar said, from the things he told me before I came here.
It was about me and Tom, Alex said. That boy is going to save my life someday.
Briar didn't have anything to say to that. Neither did Alex, really.
The rest of the night passed in a blur for Tom. He vaguely remembered someone putting him to bed, but when he blinked his eyes open just after sunrise, he wasn't sure what he'd dreamed and what had actually happened. It took him a moment to realize that, no, he hadn't dreamed Alex. That part was real. He pressed the heels of his hands tightly against his eyes, pushing until red spots danced across his closed lids. Now that he was more coherent, better able to remember what happened the night before, a hollow feeling was back in his stomach.
Christ. Alex. Had it all been a lie, every second of it?
A chance meeting on a street corner, coffee sloped all down a stranger's expensive leather jacket.
I'm sorry, man,
Tom apologized, trying to clean some of it up with the handful of napkins he'd grabbed for his muffin. I'm Alex, the guy said, completely unconcerned with his jacket. Let me buy you another cup.
Do you like pictures?
Alex asked, picking up Tom's camera and looking through the lens. He was holding it wrong as he pretended to snap a photo. He looked ridiculous, but Tom couldn't stop himself from smiling.
Yeah, he said. Something like that.
Hey, Tom. Sorry I'm late. Alex's smile was a little goofy as he stood outside Tom's apartment, hands in the pockets of his jeans. Tom just shook his head and stepped aside to let him in.
Guess what? Alex continued.
What? Alex leaned in and fit his mouth over Tom's, kissing him slowly before pulling away.
So many nice memories, thoughts so vivid that Tom could practically feel them.
Too bad they weren't real.
Had they laughed about him? Back at the safe house. Stupid Tom Conrad. He runs away from the vampires, straight to a whole new set of them. Had it been a game? Did Schechter let him stay so his people would have something to do? Tom sniffed and burrowed down further into his blankets. At least it was daytime. He could be miserable all by himself. "I'm glad you're awake," a voice said from the doorway to the bedroom. "I might feel like an asshole if I dragged you out of bed." "Fuck off, Ryan," Tom said. He thought briefly of fighting his way out of the blankets so he could glare, but decided that it wasn't worth the effort. "That would make you happy, so no," Ryan said. "You should know by now that you can't always get what you want." "Are you seriously quoting the Stones at me?" Tom demanded, finally finding a way out of his nest of blankets. He looked at Ryan as though he'd gone crazy. Ryan just stared right back, not saying anything for a while. "I saw them bring you in last night," Ryan said eventually. "You were pretty out of it." "That's none of your fucking business," Tom snapped. "If you want to talk, go find your friend. He seems like he's actually got some brains in his head. Maybe some of it will rub off on you." "You don't think much of me, do you?" Ryan asked, tilting his head to the side. "That's surprising. Most people at least get to know me before they brush me off." "I don't need to know you," Tom said. "You're here, aren't you? That makes you stupid. Or naive. Pick one." "I'm not sure if you've noticed, Tom, but you're here too. And from the way Brendan tells it, you chose this life." "Because I didn't know," Tom insisted. "What did you think you were getting into?" Ryan asked, curious. "It's not that," Tom said, deflating somewhat. "I knew what they were, but I just..." "Just what?" Ryan pressed. "You should be home with your parents," Tom snapped. "Not sitting here bothering me." "My mother's long gone," Ryan said easily, showing none of the vulnerability that had come out with his friend the night before. "And my father's a drunk who probably doesn't have long left to live. But you didn't actually expect me to agree with you. You've worked out for yourself that things aren't quite right with me. You're smart, after all." "Don't talk like you know me," Tom said, shaking his head. "Then stop telling me what I should be doing," Ryan replied. "I know what I'm doing here." "Do you really?" Tom drawled, leaning back against the headboard. He fixed Ryan with a dark look. "So you just wandered in here on your own after reading the brochure? You've never had second thoughts?" Ryan didn't answer him, and Tom smiled. The expression wasn't very nice. "Where is he sleeping?" Tom pressed. Ryan looked confused at the change of subject. "In our bed," Ryan said warily after a moment. "It would be so easy to save yourself, Ryan," Tom said, moving so that he was on his knees, a little closer to the other boy. His voice took on an urging tone. "He was dumb enough to fall asleep beside you. That makes him vulnerable. A stake is all you need, and you can make one out of any piece of furniture. Dandies aren't very smart. They keep decorating with wood." Tom smiled again and leaned forward. "I could do it for you." "The fuck you will!" Ryan yelled, reaching out and shoving Tom hard against the headboard. Tom didn't fight back, despite outweighing Ryan by at least 20 pounds. He laughed as Ryan tightened his hold in Tom's shirt. He wondered if Ryan was going to try and shake him, and the thought made him laugh even more. "Tell me,"
Tom asked, once he'd stopped laughing enough to be able to breathe. Did Brandon fuck with your head? Maybe make you think there was nothing wrong with the suggestions he was giving you? Did you know that I have visions? Ryan countered. Sometimes I can see the future, just like Schechter can. What? Tom got very quiet then, staring at Ryan in disbelief. Didn't know that, did you? Ryan asked innocently. The way I figure it, and I'm not alone in this, not at all, you and he must have gotten pretty cozy. And considering the fact that one of Schechter's people brought you back last night, that pretty much proves it. So did he ever tell you about his talent? It's pretty awesome, I can assure you. There's a reason everyone's afraid of him. Ryan leaned in closer, a small smile playing on his lips. They call him the Puppet Master, he said softly, as though confiding a secret. I wonder why. Fuck you, Tom yelled, shoving Ryan away. The other boy laughed, even as he fell off the bed. Who knows, he continued. Maybe one day I'll dream about you too. Get the fuck out of here, Tom yelled. He reached for the nearest object to throw, his hand closing around the bronze lamp on the bedside table. Ryan dodged it easily, moving to stand at the foot of the bed. What's wrong? You can dish it out but can't take it? He asked seriously. You can scare Spencer with comments about his parents. You can threaten Brendan. But you can't handle it when I point out a teensy-tiny possibility. I was going to come home, Tom said, the words just slipping out. He wanted to clap a hand over his mouth once they were out, but he forced himself to keep his hands where they were, fisted in the bedclothes. He hadn't meant to say anything, but it wasn't that Ryan had pointed out a teensy-tiny possibility. He'd pointed out the glaringly obvious. Yeah? Ryan asked warily, clearly unsure about Tom's sudden sharing. Tom was silent for a while, not sure if he wanted to continue. I had my bags packed, Tom said, several minutes later, when Ryan finally turned away, having given up on the conversation. So what happened? Ryan asked. Tom looked up at him then, hating that his eyes were wet. I met Alex, he said softly. Ryan just stood there, unsure of what to say.